From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, the death penalty, how one woman witnessed 280 executions in Texas, and how that affected her. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. This week, Texas executed Chris Young. The state put him to death for the 2004 murder of Hasmukh Patel during a robbery at his San Antonio convenience store. Before Young was put to death, his final statement was, "I want to make sure the Patel family knows I love them like they love me. Make sure the kids in this world know I'm being executed, and those kids I've been mentoring keep this fight going." Young had told children to avoid the path that his life took. Texas has executed 553 prisoners since 1976, when capital punishment was reinstated. This is more than any other state. Nationally, public backing for the death penalty has been slipping, and the most recent polling data shows support at its lowest level in 4.5 decades. According to an October 2017 Gallup poll, 55% of U.S. adults support capital punishment for convicted murderers. And a UT Texas Tribune poll released last month shows that Texans still strongly support the death penalty, 65%, 25% oppose it. This represents a 10% decrease in support over the last 3 years. But most Texans can count themselves as fortunate in that they've never had a direct experience with the state's death penalty. Most people have never traveled to Huntsville and witnessed the Texas Department of Criminal Justice deliver the ultimate punishment. But Michelle Lyons has. Over 11 years, she has stood and watched 278 men and women take their last breath at the hand of the state of Texas. Michelle Lyons writes about her experiences witnessing executions, first as a newspaper reporter and then working for the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, in her book, Death Row, The Final Minutes. I asked her to read a portion from her book.
One of Larry and my favorite things to do was stand outside the walls unit and watch inmates be released. The inmates who had done their time and owed nothing else to the state walked out the front door. The inmates who were on parole walked out the side entrance because they had to tie things up with the parole office. They'd all come out in a big swarm, carrying these little red onion sacks in which would be their belongings. It was the coolest thing to watch a former inmate break into a huge smile and see their kids running up the street before jumping into their arms. Or you'd see a former inmate tenderly embracing and kissing his wife or girlfriend. That gave me the chills. But more and more, I just felt sad for those former inmates who had nobody to greet them and were having to watch all this joy around them. You'd see them trudge off towards the Greyhound station with their bus voucher in one hand and onion sack over their shoulder. Who knew where they were going, whether they had anybody to go to, or whether they'd soon be back.
So, Michelle, your book, Death Row, The Final Minutes, this is a different side of that. These are the people who were able to leave the prison system, but much of your attention, although not all of your attention, as you worked for the Texas prison system, was concerned with dealing with people who didn't leave. Can you talk about how you came to be that person witnessing so many executions?
Yes. When I graduated from Texas A&M University, I graduated with a degree in journalism and started out as the education reporter for the Bryan College Station Eagle. And I covered that beat for a couple of years before leaving to join the staff at the Huntsville Item, where I covered very routine newspaper stuff. I was the City Hall reporter. I covered a lot of features and spot news. And then in 2000, there was an opening for the reporter who traditionally covered the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. And in that role, the reporter who covered the prison beat would also be the person responsible for witnessing every execution, because the Huntsville Item has a spot to witness every execution since the executions are carried out in Huntsville. And so at the time when I took on that role, I knew that that meant I would be covering some executions, but up until that point, there had been just, you know, maybe a dozen each year. I had no idea that in 2000, that would be the year that Texas would have a record-breaking 40 executions. So when I signed on in January of 2000, I basically signed on that year alone that there were 40 executions, and I covered 38 of them. So that's really how I got started covering them, and why I guess the numbers started adding up so quickly. I would point out really that was a small part of my job. It was the part that got the most attention, and certainly that people were always the most curious about. But covering the prison system in the prison town, it involves so much more than executions. I mean, you're covering board meetings and a lot of administrative stuff and budgets and lobbying and things like that. So, I mean, the executions were a small part of it. It's just that, I mean, there's nothing I would say that gets as much media attention as the executions.
But I want to also go back further than your college graduation. You basically grew up in a newsroom, and because of your father, he ran a newspaper, and you saw things before you even became a college student studying journalism. You were already pretty much a veteran.
I did work while I was in high school. My father was the publisher of a small newspaper in Illinois, and they needed a darkroom technician, and traditionally it was always a high school student. And so we moved there my junior and senior year, and, you know, moving to a brand new school in the middle of high school, I didn't have any friends, so I was kind of the perfect candidate because I had nothing else to do. And so they taught me how to develop film and print photos, because back then, I mean, nothing was digital. And that's what I did. So every morning I would go and process film and print pictures, and then started taking a lot of my own photos. And in doing so, I did start covering some, I guess, pretty heavy scenes for, you know, at the time I was 16. For a 16-year-old, I covered some, you know, significant accidents. I covered a couple of fires and, you know, a few fatalities and stuff. So I think by the time I was a little bit older, but by no means was I old, I was still in my early 20s, I would say that as far as journalists go, I had already seen a number of scenes that usually you don't see until you're a little bit older and I guess further along in your journalism career.
Yeah, people don't tell you when you're in journalism school, you are going to see dead bodies. You are going to see horrible things.
True.
People look at you, Michelle Lyons, and that you work for the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, and you were a PR person, you witnessed executions, you saw things. European journalists come over and they talk to you and they look at you and they say, why aren't you different? Why are you this way? How can you be so distant from experiences that you've witnessed?
I definitely became very adept at compartmentalizing everything that I was seeing. And I think any good journalist is able to do that. So I think that in a lot of ways, I think that it gave people the impression that I was cold towards the process, which was really not the case. Internally, I had feelings about the things that I was seeing, and I had my own, I guess, conflict or turmoil about some of the executions or the process itself. But as a former journalist and then this, as a spokesperson for the prison system, you know, that wasn't my job. That wasn't my role. And really, it wasn't my right or was it proper for me to show any of that. And so it's funny because after the book came out, I did get an email to that effect. I had a gentleman from Europe who sent me an email and said that he had been present at one of the executions where he had seen me deliver a press conference afterwards, and that he had come away thinking, my God, that is like the coldest woman that I've ever seen. And he said that he had read my book and read about that specific execution, and that I had in fact had a really difficult time with it, and said, you know, after reading it, that he realized that I had just been doing a job.
Yeah, what about when Katie Couric asked you about witnessing an execution?
I did an interview with the Today Show when Gary Graham was executed in 2000. And she asks me a question about whether or not I have a difficult time witnessing the executions. And my response, I was trying to convey, no, I'm doing my job, but it didn't come across that way. When I viewed it back later, and when a few of my friends saw it, they said that I came across as being very flip about it, because my response was basically, no, I don't have a problem at all. It's just me doing a job. It's very clinical and all. It was just, I think, me being young and not really having had a lot of experience answering those types of questions before a national audience.
I'm reading your book, and you have a lot of great stories, interactions with men on death row, some acts of kindness. We mentioned Larry Fitzgerald earlier. He was the longtime spokesperson for the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. Many journalists remember him fondly. He was a Marlboro man, kind of Texan, had a great demeanor. He would sneak cigarettes into the death row for a man's last day, which was against the rules. But, you know, these small acts of kindness that he would come in there, and yet he also maintained this distance, deciding whether or not the death penalty was right or wrong.
I was just laughing as you were just saying that. I mean, Larry Fitzgerald was just a larger than life character. I mean, he was absolutely the face of TDCJ, and that's, I mean, just the best thing that I can see. I think I was there twice as long, and yet he will always be the person that everyone remembers, and I'm not even kind of offended by that, because he was just kind of my hero, you know? I mean, working with him was such a joy, and he made being there fun, because he knew what the journalists needed and wanted, and they trusted him because he didn't betray that trust. And the inmates loved him because he was firm, but he was respectful. And yes, when it came to the executions, I mean, he treated those with the utmost respect. And he was the person who was kind of in charge of smuggling in these cigarettes for the inmates on that final day. He would somehow get them in, and you could always tell when you'd go in to witness the execution, you could smell cigarette smoke, and you knew Larry had been there.
Or you smuggle in catfish.
Yeah, well, yeah, I did not. It wasn't as much as I smuggled in the catfish. The warden knew, you know, I brought it in, and
it was for a last meal.
Yes, there was a high profile case out of Conroe, and the inmate had wanted catfish for his last meal, which is not something that the kitchen has. And that is the rule in Texas, is the last meal has to be something where the ingredients are readily available in the kitchen. So if the ingredients aren't something that we would have at the prison unit, then you can't have it. And so catfish is not one of those items. And so I thought about it, and I thought, you know, I could run down to this store down the street, and I bet they would have it. And so I did, and they did. And so I brought the catfish back and gave it to, there was one particular inmate at the time who was tasked with making all the last meals. And so he fried it up and gave it to the inmate. But then, you know, I felt guilty about it. I felt guilty afterwards because the crime was a particularly nasty crime. He had killed a 12-year-old child that had been the son of his best friends. And it was basically a ransom scheme gone awry. And, you know, I felt kind of guilty afterwards, you know, not for showing this man compassion, but just, I don't know, it was just a really complicated, I guess it was just complicated. And that's kind of what I was trying to convey in the book, that it was just, in the end, it was so complicated all the way around, because all you saw in that role was sadness and loss. You were constantly dealing with all of these families that were dealing with loss.
This is Texas Matters. I'm David Martin Davies. I'm speaking with Michelle Lyons. She witnessed 280 Texas executions and wrote the book Death Row, The Final Minutes. This is not the book for someone who's trying to and put a button on if the death penalty is right or wrong for Texas. What I think this is a book is about just the wear and tear of having a death penalty in the state, what it does to people and the families and people who have to deal with it, like yourself or with Larry Fitzgerald. And like you, you're an avatar for Texas in this story. You are a witness. And as a witness to these executions, either as a journalist or as an employee of the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, this has a wearing effect on you. How do you describe that?
I mean, I think that's a very good way of describing it, is that, yes, I think that when I came into it, you know, a lot of people are quick to point out, well, you could have left at any time. And that's absolutely true. You know, but I think the key is that at the time that you're in the middle of it, you don't really realize that there's necessarily that kind of an impact. You know, when you start realizing to an extent that it's having an impact, but you don't really realize what the impact is because it's your job. And so therefore you try to keep most of your emotions at bay. You don't really try and go down that path. You don't really try and give it a whole bunch of thought, because if you do, you're not going to be able to continue walking into that chamber. And so, you know, anytime I would start feeling too much of any emotion, I would just kind of push it back and keep going on. And so really it was after I left that I started having a hard time, you know, just remembering everything. You know, because it, as you said, it's not a pro-death penalty book. It's not an anti-death penalty book. You know, if I had to choose, I would say that I tend to definitely be more supportive of the death penalty. You know, as a parent, I think that it's hard not to be, only because I think as a parent, the worst thing you could possibly imagine is something happening to your child. And that's what so many of the folks there are going through, something that's happened to their children. But then at the same time, what I also was seeing was, you know, these women who were watching their sons die in front of them. And so that's where I started feeling so much conflict, is that, you know, you were seeing families that were torn apart all around. You know, it's just, it's complicated. And I guess to my goal or my hope was that I just wanted people to see that there are arguments on both sides. And so many people are so passionate about the death penalty, and they really have no dog in the fight. They have not been touched by it one way or the other. They've not been a victim of violent crime. They don't have a loved one in prison. You know, they have these really strong feelings about it, and yet really haven't been impacted by it at all.
So as a journalist, I have a rule whenever I write about a death penalty story, and it's always include the name of the victim. If it was a murder victim, make sure that name is in the story. It seems, you see stories all the time, they talk about someone's being executed and they may just say for a murder at a convenience store. But if we have the name of the person who did the crime, we should have the name of the person who died in that crime.
Absolutely. Yeah, because I mean, that's the whole point of what this is. You know, I mean, the person is there for the murder of that individual. So, no, I think that's absolutely the right approach.
But we do remember, though, that the justice system that we have is flawed.
Yes.
Anthony Graves, he spent 12 years on death row before a federal court tossed out his wrongful capital murder conviction. We've had about 50 convicted people exonerated with DNA testing in Texas. We know that sometimes that our criminal justice system gets things wrong, or they cut corners. I mean, how much certainty is there that the person who is on the gurney with the IV in their arm is guilty, or did they get the due process that they were supposed to get?
Well, I think, you know, that's absolutely why, you know, people need absolute access to DNA testing. You know, there have been various laws that have been passed that have made some of that more restrictive, and we can't have that. You know, people should absolutely have access to that. If there's anything that could possibly exonerate someone or free them, then they need access to all of that testing. I also have issues with, you know, laws that have tried to speed up the process. I don't agree with that. You know, again, you're potentially fast-tracking an innocent person being executed. I think if you are going to carry out an execution, obviously you have to be certain that you're getting it right. You know, there can be no question.
Right. So this is the most serious thing that the state of Texas does. It puts a person to death in all of our name. Every citizen of Texas shares that responsibility.
Yes. And I mean, honestly, I feel that there needs to be more transparency than there has been in recent years. You know, specifically now, there's a lack of transparency when it comes to the lethal injection drugs and where they're coming from. You know, and I get some of the reasons for that, and because it makes it more difficult to obtain them. But I think there again, if you're going to carry out an execution, you have to ensure that it's being done properly and correctly, and that means ensuring that those chemicals are coming from a reputable place.
I remember starting out as a reporter many, many, many years ago, going to death row to do a story, as it's basically just getting like, here's death row, here's where we have the gurney, here's where we kill people, allowing me to understand the entire run of how things worked. Mm-hmm. I don't think I could get that today. I have tried to get access at that level to understand what is happening today with the death penalty and how it's being carried out. It is no longer open and transparent.
No. When I left in about 2012, that was one of the reasons. Shortly before I left, in fact, I had had a conflict with our executive administration over something very similar. I had a very routine request from one of the television stations out of San Antonio, who asked if they could shoot just some B-roll in the death chamber, which, I mean, as you said, I mean, the death chamber was filmed many, many, many hundreds, thousands of times by journalists all over the world, and was told that I couldn't do it. And, you know, I explained that they needed to do it because all they had was some old beta footage. And of course, you know, television is progressing and they needed HD footage, and was adamantly told it could not be done. And, you know, I kept arguing with it. So, no, I absolutely believe that you would not be able to do it today.
Let's get back to you and some of the conflict and friction that you had with your bosses that led up to your leaving the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. One thing I was, in your book, you write about how when Larry Fitzgerald left and you're looking for the promotion, and they told you you're not going to get the promotion because of what you wore at a board meeting.
Yes. Well, and... it was after I'd been passed over for a promotion to be the director of that office, but I had been promised if I was passed over for that particular promotion that I would at least be promoted to the manager position that had been Fitzgerald's, because basically the director and Fitzgerald had retired on the same day because they were both eligible for a legislative incentive that had been offered for potential retirees. And so it was the new director of the office who told me that. He didn't like what I had on at the board meeting, didn't think that I was dressed up enough, and told me. And literally, this was our first meeting. Did not know me, had never worked with me, and he told me that he was going to recommend that I not get this promotion that I had earned, you know, after several years of working there, because he didn't like what I had on.
And then there were other conflicts over timekeeping. Some say this was retaliation because you had been too friendly with the media.
Yes. And I mean, obviously, I tend to agree with that. You know, I think that there had already been a shift towards not being as transparent, and I still represented an old way of doing things. You know, I had worked under Larry Fitzgerald, and he had taught me everything that he knew, including being transparent and trying to be helpful to the media.
Definitely
being truthful. I mean, Larry was adamant that, I mean, you do not lie. You know, you will get caught in the lie, and once you were caught in the lie, your credibility is completely lost. And so, you know, that was something that he and I both took very seriously. And so if we didn't know something, we said we didn't know, and we would find out and get back to you, that kind of thing. And, you know, both of us were very adamant that we were not going to lie. You know, and we always used to joke. I mean, that didn't always mean that we would say everything we knew, but we were never going to lie. And that was not necessarily the way that some of our superiors wanted us to do things. And so I think they were ready to go a different direction.
So where does that leave Texas, the people of Texas, and that what we need to know about putting people to death? We have capital punishment. There's still a support for it in the state. Is the attitude that they want to keep this in the shadows? That why not be transparent? Why not be forthcoming? How does that help the cause of justice?
when it comes to witnessing the executions, there are 5 media spots that are available to witness every execution. And traditionally, those 5 media spots, one went to the Associated Press, one went to the Huntsville Item, and then the other 3, the first preference for those 3 was always given to the community where the crime happened. If those weren't filled, then it went to Texas media, then it was open to national media and such. In recent years, those spots are sitting unfilled because the new policy is that if no media from the area where the crime occurred comes, nobody gets to use them. And so I know of instances where Texas media is not being able to witness executions in Texas because they don't happen to be from that community. So as an example, a reporter with the Texas Tribune was denied entry to a number of executions being carried out in Texas because she was based in Austin and these crimes didn't happen in Austin. And so I think that's problematic. I think that, you know, people should be concerned that reporters are not being allowed to go in and report about what's going on in the actual chamber. I mean, still, the Associated Press is there, the Huntsville Item is often there, but that's a concern. Reporters should be there because they are the eyes and ears of the public when it comes to the actual executions being carried out.
What do you think we ought to change about the way we execute people in Texas?
I think that the process has to be transparent, and it's not transparent enough. I mean, the only thing that I think has to remain obviously always completely confidential and secret is the identity of the executioners for security reasons. But otherwise, there's really very little that I think should be kept secret about it. I have some issues with the law of parties, the laws where if, you know, 5 people are at a crime scene and only one pulls the trigger, all 5 can be held responsible, though they all did. It's not that I have an issue with that as a concept. My issue with it is this, is that I saw at least a couple of executions where the actual murderer, the actual trigger man, didn't get the death penalty. So the person that I witnessed was known not to have committed the crime when the person who did actually commit the crime didn't get the death penalty. And I have an issue with that. I don't see how that works at all. Then the number of hoops that people have to jump through to get DNA testing is just absurd.
So if we talk about reforms for the use of the death penalty, we should hold this to the highest standard. If someone is going to be sent to their death, their defense, their trial, everything about that case should be the gold standard.
Yes, absolutely.
And are we meeting that now?
I'll be honest. Working for the prison system, that was not something that we would have been as familiar with. You know, when you work for the prison system, we're getting people after they've been convicted. So that's why, I mean, I can speak more about, you know, their appeals process and access to DNA testing and their appeals and such, but I can't speak as knowledgeably about anything happening in trial and such, because I just wouldn't have known.
Michelle Lyons wrote the book, Death Row, The Final Minutes, My Life as a Execution Witness in America's Most Infamous Prison. As a reporter and then as an employee of the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, Lyons witnessed 278 executions. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You could also write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. And that's where you can find past Texas Matters programs to listen to. And you can find us wherever you get those podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.